And our last headline comes from the Sunshine State. Florida Governor Charlie Crist signed a bill Monday that moves his state's primary elections to January 29th. What's the big deal? Well, that puts Florida behind only the caucuses in Iowa and Nevada and the primaries in New Hampshire. It's a big violation of primary rules, and the Democratic and Republican parties are strategizing behind closed doors to see what to do about it. They want to keep Florida in the game without having to strip it of its delegates. Are you confused by all this? Well, you are not the only one. And here to help us make sense of all this, we've got Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Welcome back, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Farai.
So it's this is all, you know, even as a political junkie myself, I'm like, this is kind of crazy. So I'm going to start with you, Ron. What exactly is going on here with these negotiations?
Well, I can tell you that there are a number of states around the country right now that are very interested in being important and very interested in being integral to the presidential nomination process. You've seen states like California, Illinois, Florida move their primary dates back such that by the time that we reach February 5th, over 60% of the United States population will have cast their ballot for president on either the Republican or the Democratic side. So what we see here with Florida is Florida is just the most recent state that's trying to be relevant and trying to have the 10 Republicans and the numerous Democrats running for the nation's highest office to step in their state, to campaign across their state. And I just wonder, is this campaign season just too soon? Have we started too soon? I think the answer to that is yes. And what these folks are trying to do is only testament to that, that they're just trying to push it up further and further to make their state more relevant.
Mary, it's often a situation where the states at the end of the whole primary season feel like, hey, we didn't get our say. No one cares. You know, we can go vote, but nobody cares what we think because people drop out over time. You know, with the Democrats, they had a field of 9 at one point in 2004, and then you winnow down and you winnow down and you winnow down. Is this really a factor of people feeling like they're disenfranchised in this strange way by the primaries?
Well, I think that's why the dates were pushed back, but it may backfire because now you've got such a bunching on the front end that no candidate has really a lot of time to spend on the specific issues in any state, so things will be more general. Given who's in the field and who the front runners are, there may be some jamming by the time you get to the end, and the states that are left after February 5th may end up having more influence than the ones at first. I mean, they try to do it, but it may not turn out the way they think. And, for example, with Florida and South Carolina coming on the same day, if it stays that way, one of the interesting things about that is that in the Democratic primary, there will be lots of black voters. So you will have black voters getting a first bite there very early, and this may influence the race in some ways. But I have a hunch that the ones who come at the end are going to end up making the decision instead of the ones who come on the front end.
Well, it's going to be an interesting thing to see. There's been a lot of criticism before we let this topic go and move on of the fact that the traditional early states like Iowa and New Hampshire are so white, so overwhelmingly white compared to the overall U.S. population, that is. Briefly, Ron, and then Mary, is this something that do you think will be rectified by these changes?
Well, I think the professor's right. I think with some of the states front-loading coming up before February 20th, of course, February 5th is the super, super, super duper Tuesday. I think that African Americans in a lot of the southern states, as the professor mentioned, such as South Carolina, will have more of an opportunity to have their voices heard. But I think Iowa, the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary are always the first in the nation, and I don't see that changing. But if there is a benefit for the candidates trying to front load, I think it is that more African Americans will have their voices heard earlier rather than later in the process.
Mary?
I think that's right. And I think that Iowa and New Hampshire will still have influence because they'll be first. And I don't think the Democratic Party will permit somebody to get ahead of New Hampshire. New Hampshire will probably move theirs to December if somebody tries to get ahead of them. And we'll
they could do
November.
It on Christmas, national holiday.
Yeah, pretty soon.
Give away free gifts. You never
right.
know.
Right. But I do think that there will be more diversity in the group of folks who go out to vote early on, and they'll have their say. But as I said, in the end, it may turn out that those states that come last have more influence. We'll have to see.
All right. Well, staying with the theme of presidential politics, moving on, Bill Richardson delivered a speech at the Millennium Biltmore Hotel in L.A. declaring his bid for the White House. Here's a clip.
Con orgullo, espero ser el primer presidente latino de los Estados Unidos.
That is him saying, with pride, I hope to become the first Latino president of the U.S. What do you think about this bid? Do you think, first of all, that he is gunning for the vice presidency by running for president? And secondly, how much sway does he have as a Latino in a race where so many people from both major parties are trying to appeal to Latinos? Mary first.
I think that he won't be the first Latino president, even if he wins, because Jimmy Smith's in West Wing was the first Latino president. But having said that, and Bill Richardson is a very attractive candidate, but he has to emphasize that he's a Hispanic because his name is Richardson, and a lot of the Hispanics don't know that. So unlike Barack Obama, who doesn't have to emphasize that he's black and they're both running toward the middle, Richardson has to come out and play that card of trying to say who he is. But if he does, I think he will appeal to a lot of Hispanics in the race and a lot of other people because he's a man with wide, broad experience.
Give us a sense of some of those different roles he's played over time.
Well, he's been UN ambassador. He was Secretary of Energy. He's governor of a state, and the American public always likes governors to run for office for the presidency. It's much rarer to have senators and for gosh sake, not a congressman be elected to president of the United States. So he has all of this going for him, a very attractive guy. And the Hispanic factor is just an extra measure that might help him.
Ron, I just have to interject something completely inappropriate. But
of course,
you are a political talking head. Both of you are. You go on TV. I've noticed that Bill Richardson cannot get decent makeup. There is something going on with the ethnic angle. These makeup artists are turning him orange. I would say to the Richardson campaign, whatever else you do, don't let the makeup artists get to you. I say this as someone who does occasionally my share of TV. But that's my personal digression, you know, standing up for people of color on television. What do you think about the prospect of Richardson as a key candidate on a split ticket with someone like Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or John Edwards?
Well, I think people are underestimating Bill Richardson. As the professor just said a moment ago, for goodness sakes, you haven't had a senator elected president of the United States since John Kennedy back in 1960. Americans seem to like governors moving from one executive mansion to the other. But looking at Richardson's credentials, for goodness sakes, he's one of the most qualified people who's out there running on the Democrat ledger. He has vast foreign affairs experience. He's traveled overseas numerous times. He's widely respected in North Korea, a country that has a very important relationship with the United States as we look at trying to ameliorate relations in that part of the world. So I don't think, to answer your first question, that he's running for the number two spot. I think he's running for number one, and I think he has a strong chance of breaking out of the pack. But if you look and you say, Ron, who's going to be on the ticket, it wouldn't surprise me if Governor Richardson's on the ticket in one way, shape, or form for the Democrats come the nomination process.
All right. We have 1 minute and 47 seconds left. I want to ask you about the border fence. There's this big immigration bill circulating on Capitol Hill. One thing that Bill Richardson said was that if he's elected president, if there is some move to build out this fence, he would tear it down quickly, quickly, quickly. Ron, what's your read? Mary, what's your read on that specific provision?
I think that the fence provision is too small rather than too large. The bill that the Congress signed into law last year provided for 700 miles. The new legislation calls for 370. The United States needs to improve the sovereignty of its border.
I think that the fence is a bad idea for environmental reasons, for the animals, the endangered species, as well as the fact that it won't keep people from coming across. Nothing keeps people from coming across somewhere other. That's the way immigration goes. So as long as there's a pull of jobs and the push of bad economic conditions at home, immigrants are going to keep coming to the United States. It's just a bad part of a bill that is flawed, but is likely to pass, at least in the Senate, because the lion in winter, Ted Kennedy, has come forward to say, this is the best shot, so I'm going to take it.
All right. On that note, Mary and Ron, thanks so much.
Thanks,
Farai.
Mary Frances Berry is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Ron Christie is vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Both guests join me from NPR's Washington, D.C. headquarters.